Recovery On Air, the official podcast of Crossroads Addiction Rehabilitation. Candid discussion about addiction and recovery with the people who have lived it, along with input from experts on the journey from struggle to triumph. Laugh, cry, and be inspired. And now, your hosts of Recovery On Air, Donna Alexander and Beth Mercado.
Welcome to Recovery On Air, the show in which we work to break the stigma against addiction by talking about it. I'm Beth Mercado, one of your hosts.
I'm Donna Alexander, your other host.
And today we have very special guest, Brent Downs from St. Joseph the Worker. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
I'm grateful for the opportunity. Glad to be here.
And I'm so glad to see you.
Oh, it's
we
awesome.
We have such an amazing history, and it's so good to have you here and really get in touch with what you're doing right now. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Yeah. So you guys know each other. You guys have history, but I don't really know you. Tell me who you are and what St. Joseph the Worker is.
I'm Brent Downs. I'm the executive director of St. Joseph the Worker. And what we do and what we've done for the past 33 years is provide employment service to the working poor, the needy, and the homeless throughout the Phoenix and the Valley. And so we've been working to just try to get people connected with opportunity, you know, to get people off the street or get people out of transition. Because when you're living in transition or you're homeless, you know, it's so hard to get your feet back on the ground. And so at St. Joseph Worker, we do one thing. We help people get connected to work. We help people stay connected to work. And we provide all the resources a person needs to go to work today. Because this valley is so blessed right now with an incredible economy. There's so many jobs and not that many people looking for them. That our biggest need, everybody asks me every day, what's your biggest need at St. Joseph Worker? I need people that want to work. And I can provide everything they need to go to work except one thing, and that's the willingness to go to work. And I've learned that's a lot like recovery, spending 10 years working at the crossroads, that recovery and employment and life in general is all about the willingness to suit up, show up, and live it to its fullest.
Absolutely. So you guys are not like a recruiting agency and put people into work. You work especially with addicts and alcoholics and the poor.
We work with a lot of folks. Well, so with COVID, you know, we have a lot of clients that never imagined being in our office seeking services.
Oh, okay.
And we started in the basement of Andre House of Hospitality downtown. So we basically serve just the homeless folks coming through the food line. And then we moved to the Human Service Campus 15 years ago. And on that campus, there's 19 nonprofits serving the homeless community on one campus. And a few years ago, well, 9 years ago, when I got to St. Joseph the Worker, we began outreach. So we partnered with agencies like Crossroads and other sober living, mental health, and other shelter-type places to provide those services to their clients. And since that time, we've opened two offices around the valley. We have one in Mesa and one in Central Phoenix. And we have a 39-foot RV that, post-COVID, we'll get back on the road and be able to travel around. We used to bring it to the east side and park it in the parking lot and do employment services right there on the spot.
Oh, amazing. Sorry, go ahead.
So I have a question for you.
All right.
So for our listeners, you said you have a lot of resources. What exactly does that mean?
Well,
clothing?
Absolutely. We do interview clothing. So we suit you up, get you ready for the interview, provide you with a good resume. We give you three hot job leads of people that are hiring right now. So there's not this running all over town trying to find a job. We give you a bus pass to job search or a gas card. And so when you go out and you secure that job and you come back, we provide you with 5 days worth of clothing, any resource you need to go to work. So if, say, you get a job at a coffee shop or a restaurant, you know, you have to have black pants, white shirt, non-slip shoes, a food handler's card, and some transportation. Well, you add that up, that's like $80 worth of stuff. You know, but we provide that for clients. And we also help them on the computer because a lot of our clients have trouble with technology. Some of them are old like me, and I have no idea. This whole Zoom thing is killing me. But, you know, we sit down with them and we help navigate the test because we ring that bell. When somebody gets a job at St. Joseph Worker, we ring that bell. And when that bell rings, it's the most precious time in our organization. And if I'm at the facility where the bell's ringing, I go out, I give them my business card. And even during COVID, there's a hug involved. Or there's excitement because somebody's life is changing. And I hand them that card, and I tell them, if you ever need anything, you call me. And my cell phone number's on there, the cell phone number everybody has. So I get calls from clients all the time. First off, just checking to make sure I'm going to answer my phone. And then I get great calls from folks that wake up one morning and say, you know, I just don't want to go to work today. And I'm like, I love my job, but there's mornings I wake up and I don't want to go to work. And so I'm so blessed to have the connections that I made in my time in recovery and during my time at Crossroads that I'll just tell them, go to work. I'll have a friend meet you for lunch. And I'll call one of my friends and they'll meet them for lunch. And they'll tell them how when they were homeless or when they were living in transition or when they lived at Crossroads, you know, they had this kind of job that it was hard to get up and go to every day. But it built that self-sufficiency that's such a big part of their recovery today. And they'll tell their story to the clients one-on-one. And it's such a game changer for our organization to have people who won't stand on the stage and talk of their story, because today they're doctors and lawyers and board presidents and they're somebodies. And they're not going to say, well, you know, I was a trash can drunk or, almost died with a needle in my arm around the boardroom, because they don't want to be labeled. You know, we're starting to break the stigma, but it's not broken. So right. they can't tell their story like I can out in public. So they let me be the voice, and then they meet with people one-on-one. And they tell them how they went from this horrible job to driving a McLaren. And the clients are like, oh, my God, this was the most amazing day, and their job sucked worse than mine did. And mine does. And they go back to work the next day. And before they know it, they're working every day. And I've had clients that have been at work 2 or 3 years who still have these relationships with these mentors that I've had, who still stay in contact with them. And we still have lunch and we still have breakfast. It's all about the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, our organization is very relationship driven.
Yeah. That's awesome that you make yourself available to the clients. So how do the clients pay for these services?
Oh, there's no cost. Everything's free.
Oh, wow.
And we're so blessed at St. Joseph the Worker. We're community funded. So our money doesn't dictate our mission. So we get money donated from the community and we can basically do whatever we want to do with our money. And so we don't have to fill out paperwork or forms or apply. We just, if somebody needs something, we're going to get it for them. You know, now everybody's moved to virtual jobs. We've given clients computers, laptops to work from home. Because some of our clients during COVID, we had one lady came in. She had worked at Denny's since she was 18, and she was 42 years old.
Oh, wow.
And
oh,
she took some bad advice from coworkers when COVID broke out that, look, you know, the restaurant's going to close. You need to go to a small restaurant that'll stay open. So she walked away from that job and didn't get any of the unemployment, no benefit. And she just was sitting there for 18 years. She'd lived in the same house, gone the same route. And she came in just distraught because our offices were open during COVID. We stayed open the whole time. So our goal is to meet with people one-on-one, because a lot of people that do employment stuff, they do it online. You know, you got to have a computer. Folks like that don't have computers. And she had no idea that she had customer service skills. You know, you waited on people for 18 years. So we connected her to one of our employer contacts, got her a computer to work from home, and she was a customer service agent for a cleaning company who sold supplies for cleaning. So you can imagine during COVID, she was doing great.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She would call and say, you know, I got people calling to thank me for sending them stuff. She goes, I don't have people at 2 a.m. complaining because their eggs are running, you know, or yelling at me because their coffee's cold. She goes, This is great. But this folks that just didn't realize the potential they had. You know, because a lot of us, when we hit the skids, we don't realize we have a marketable skill. A lot of our clients come out of prison. You know, they don't know what to do. I've been in prison. I got nothing to offer. Everybody has something to offer. And in this market we're in right now, employers are much more flexible to work with second chance folks.
So the people that have been in prison or have a felony, do you guys work with them to be able to provide the...
That's 60% of the clients we work with.
Oh, 60%. Wow.
And so we've really been able to kind of connect those folks, to kind of give them that second chance. And I can sit and talk with them and tell them, you know, this is an opportunity for you. You know, we do a resume based on what they did inside. You know, we have people, we had a guy come in my office, you know, our employment specialists have a little trouble working with him. He didn't want to open up and he was just frustrated that nobody would even interview him. And so I said, let me do your resume. And I asked, he goes, well, I've been in prison for 18 years. I have nothing to offer. And I'm like, yes, you do. I said, what, were you one of these, you know, inmates that sat in their cell and stared out the window for 18 years? He goes, well, no, I was a dishwasher for 5 years. And so I opened up the resume worksheet and said, okay, 5 years, industrial dishwashing experience, Arizona Department of Corrections. And then he kind of looked up from his shoes at me. He said, well, the five previous years, I was a line cook. I said, so you have cook experience in an industrial kitchen, Arizona Department of Corrections. And then he really gleamed up and he said, my last 5 years in, I was the kitchen manager at the noon shift. And I'm like, dude, you have management experience in an industrial kitchen. And I said, I've never been to prison, thank God. Close, should have been maybe. But you know, that's probably a hard workforce to manage. And so then he started telling me all the stories, and I said, well, you have a skill set and a management set that many employers would love to see. And so we contacted one of our friends in the restaurant business. They hired him that day. And so we rang the bell for him, and he called me about a week later, and he goes, Brent, I want to tell you something. He goes, I was going to reoffend that day because I didn't think the world out here wanted me. And so that's the change that can be made by just a job, you know, just getting a job and feeling a purpose. Because I know what it's like. I've been homeless. I've had to pay and handle. I know what it's like to not have a purpose and to have people look at you like you're something different, like you're not fit for society, you know, and to be able to kind of reinstill that dignity and respect in our clients is our biggest goal. Whether they're ready to work today or not, they're going to walk away from our office knowing they're loved. And that when the time comes and you're ready for help, you come back and see me. Just like I tell people in recovery, and people in recovery have told me, when you're ready for help, I'm going to spread my arms and help you, but I'm not going to enable you. So when you're ready to do your part, I'm going to walk beside you. I'm going to carry you when you can't carry yourself, but we're both going to do this together. And that's what we do at St. Joseph the Worker. And we're blessed to have people in recovery that work for me, actually Crossroads alumni. So, you know, we're surrounded by people who can share their experience, and they're not afraid to share it. I'm not afraid to share mine. I tell my friends every day, let me tell your story. Because I work for Crossroads. Everybody knows I was an addict and alcoholic. When you work for the old days of Crossroads, yep. You know, you were in the mix. You know,
that's
you
right.
Wasn't like you were some normie coming to work there. You know, you were in the deal. You know, you were part of the deal. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of anonymity when you were connected to the organization. So, you know, it was out there. So I would always tell them, let me tell your story. Dinners, events, I would tell their stories. And it was so nice because I really don't care. Even to today, I don't care. Like I told you, shared it on TV this morning. I was homeless, ate out of a dumpster, and if it wasn't for the program recovery and self-sufficiency, I'd be, living behind a dumpster with a needle in my arm and be dead in an hour. That's who I am when I'm not doing the right things.
Such an amazing connection between what you do and what Crossroads does, because it's the same kind of mission, helping those that nobody else wants to help. You know, that's why most of the people end up at Crossroads are homeless. They're off the streets. They have this substance use issue and they do not know what to do. So they come to us, and what a great community partnership between us now that COVID's going away a little bit.
A little bit.
Starting to get this thing opened up a little bit that we'll be able to start connecting. So I know that, so for the listeners out there, most of you already know that I was a program coordinator at Flower for almost 8 years. That's the women's facility. It is now a men's facility, but it was women's for many years. And so was Brent. He was the coordinator at the women's facility. And so he was one of my mentors when I came there. And I remember him talking to me about this little self-sufficiency part. And I didn't really quite understand what you meant by that until my first gal that had been in prison and got out and had been selling drugs before that, and she got her first paycheck with her name on it, and it was for $56.88, and she came running on the property screaming her head off, and I'm like running out of my office, oh my God, what's going on? And she's like, look, I got a paycheck and it has my name on it and they took taxes out. And I'm like, okay then. And that was my first little light bulb moment with this self-sufficiency thing. I think that a lot of people don't quite understand what that feels like to actually start getting a paycheck with your name on it that they take taxes out of,
yeah.
Which was a really big thing for her too. So talk to us just a little bit, or maybe even share some stories, some more stories that you have about that self-sufficiency part.
You know, it means a lot as far as who we are. There's more to it. The job is just a job, you know, and I had to learn that the hard way. You know, I relapsed 5 years ago because my job became more than a job. You know, I wanted to control the world. I wanted to take over the world. And I started to have trouble realizing what was important and what the main focus should be. That and I kept a secret, which was the biggest reason. You know, it's yay.
There was
trauma from times on the street. I mean, 20 years ago, I lived on the street. And I tell people every day, you know, every day you're on the street, there's trauma. And if you haven't been raped, robbed, and beaten on the streets like I have, whether it's a day, 10 days, 6 months, there's trauma there. There's a lot of stuff that gets buried down inside. It blocks your relationships. That helps you feel dignity and purpose. And we work hard to kind of push that stuff down. But when it starts to come out, I went crazy. I was absolutely nuts. I was 13 years sober, and I couldn't sleep at night. And I spoke at a young people's event in California, and I made them move me from the 10th floor to the first floor because I thought I was going to jump out the window.
Wow.
That's how crazy I got. And I kept thinking, I'm too sober to be this crazy. But the stuff I was unwilling to accept and deal with became my devil, became my demon. And so for people out there that struggle and that come back, I was so blessed of my connections I made during my time at Crossroads. And the fact that I have two beautiful daughters that love their dad. And the fact that one of my daughters is a Crossroads of Women's alumni, yeah, who I brought in there to Donna. And she told me what I told her to tell people. I don't want to see you for 90 days. Yeah. I don't want to hear from you for 90 days. And I don't want you to have any contact with her. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not fair. But you set the rules, and it's the greatest thing that ever happened to our family. So this organization is such a big part of who I am, and it's so nice to keep those connections alive from a guy who just, you know, retired at 33 and was thrown in a body bag in a dumpster at 37 and left for dead.
Oh, my God.
You know, there's no reason I should be alive today. And I have to remember that. I have to be filled with gratitude. But I don't find my gratitude unless I do service. And so for me, life happens outside the job. I love my job. I love what we do. I love the purpose that we give people. But life for me happens outside when I punch the clock. You know, I'm fortunate enough to do something I love, which a lot of my friends are. But our life happens after that. It's all about family. I got 4 grandkids living with me.
Yay!
You know, 8, 7, 3, and a year old.
Aww.
So, you know, life is an adventure every day. But, you know, a guy like me, that shouldn't be happening. You know, I should be dead in a dumpster. And I tell people every day, I'm grateful it wasn't garbage day when they left me in that body bag for dead, or I'd be in some landfill in Atlanta, you know, just an afterthought. I'd be a missing person I don't think they'd put me on a milk carton. But, you know, I think that's where God intervenes and the program intervenes.
How did you get in that body bag in the dumpster?
Well, here's the story.
I have to know.
Yeah. So I went to my 12th treatment. Because I retired at 33, went to treatment 12 times. So I started at the places, you know, the Betty Fords, the Hazelden, the Talbots, went to all those places, and I ended up at a place in Atlanta, Georgia, where I got through the program, got out, moved in with some guys, and I got loaded. And then they threw me out, and it was the best thing ever happened to me. And I had a cousin that lived there that gave me a bus ticket to get back to Baton Rouge, where I'm from. And I sold that bus ticket, and I walked into the projects of South Atlanta. Which you can imagine, a guy like me sticks out down there. And I'd been around people enough to know where the bad people were. So I looked for the door that had the most people going to it. And I just walked up the door, knocked on the door. And the guy answered the door, said, what do you want? I said, I have a duffel bag full of Everclear, because that was my drug of choice. And I said, I just want to sit in that corner and drink. He goes, dude, you crazy. Come on in. And so I did that for a number of days. And then the last blackout I had then was coming out of it with a pistol between my eyes. Calling a man of color everything you should not call a man of color. He pulled the trigger, the gun jammed, so they beat me till I thought I was dead and put me in the body bag they had laying in the floor and took me and threw me in a dumpster.
Oh, my God.
And I crawled out of that dumpster and walked to the rescue mission in Atlanta, and that's where my journey began. They got me back to Phoenix, got me connected with Crossroads, you know, and lived there for 90 days, became a night manager, went to work there, spent 10 wonderful years there doing, you know, working for CrossFit. It was a great experience. And then I got the opportunity to go to St. Joseph Worker and still working with people I get. You know, before I hit my bottom, I had no empathy for people. You know, why don't these people just pick it up by the bootstraps? And, you know, you're homeless because you want to be homeless. But I remember I had a job living at Crossroads, and I was panhandling at the old, used to be Bash's, now it's upscale Sprouts, 16th Street in Glendale, for bus fare to get to work. And my goal is I don't want a client to have to panhandle for bus fare to get a better life. And so at St. Joseph the Worker, I want to make sure the client has everything they need so they don't have to stand in the parking lot at Bash's and panhandle to get to work every day. So, and that's kind of the experience that I was given. And I believe everything happens for a reason. You know, and I sit here today as a miracle, but I have to know the gratitude and the people that got me here. It saved my life.
So I have to go back to something you just said. So I'm actually coming up on 13 years sober too.
Yay!
And so Yay. When you said that struck me. I think in our recovery process, it's that old peel the onion kind of thing, and stuff just starts happening. So can you describe just a little bit about what happened with your trauma? So I'm going to assume something here, and we know what that means, is that when you did your recovery process, even though you did the steps, there was stuff that you didn't share.
I didn't go deeper.
Yeah, that you did it. And see, that I think is something that happens to people in recovery a lot. Is that there is that, and sometimes I'm not sure that we do it on purpose.
Oh, God.
Or if God says, you know what, you are so not ready to remember that right now, so let's hold on to that for a minute. I know that some of that stuff has recently happened to me, and because of the connections I have with Crossroads and the people, I said, woo, made a phone call to a counselor and started doing that route again. So what I hear you saying is that that stuff started happening to you, and maybe you didn't reach out to get the help that you needed to get past that, and instead use old coping skills?
I just stayed busy. You know, I'm good at staying busy. I mean, you worked with me.
Yes, I did.
A 16-hour day was nothing. You know, I could stay busy enough to where I wouldn't have to look inside. You know, I was sponsoring 40 guys, going to, you know, 5 meetings a week and, you know, doing the great deal. I lived in the program, and it was great. But, you know, there was stuff there that I needed to address. It was deeper. And I didn't know. I didn't know what that trauma was like because I'd blocked it out. And then it starts to come back, and you get that whirly feeling like my old boss, Rich Merkel, used to talk about. I get the whirlies. And then you start thinking, you get that attitude of ego that I'm too far along to be this crazy. And then I started living outside the principles of the program. I started doing behavior that was not within the practicing the principles in all my affairs. And at that point, I started working the steps backwards.
Yes.
And then I hit that point to where on page 65, it says, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I drink to die.
Yes.
And I have never any day I've been a part of this program ever denied the fact that I'm a hardcore chronic alcoholic. And even after my accident, I'm so grateful I remember that I'm the alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And I can never forget that. And yet I got to that point where I forgot it. And the pain got so miserable and I was afraid to reach out that I just had to do something. So I'll never forget taking that first drink.
Yep.
And for me, the drink turned into, I was in a hotel in Central Phoenix under an assumed name, going down to the light rail at 7th Avenue and Camelback, having a homeless guy shoot me up because I'm afraid of needles.
Yep.
Hoping every day he'd miss the vein because I was drinking 3/5 of Everclear and smoking a gram of heroin a day, and I wasn't dying. I just couldn't kill myself. Yep. I'm like, God, I've tried so hard to kill myself. How do I do that? I'm too chicken to shoot myself. So I'm thinking, I'm just going to get so loaded, I'm not going to wake up. You know, and that's how I lived. And I, every day for a year, I woke up without using a drink or a drug, but I was miserable. I cried every morning because I was alive. And that's not a way to live. But I was so afraid to reach out. I was so afraid to make a phone call. Just like you said, I got a million people in my life that would have surrounded me that did. You know, there were 17 people looking over the streets of Phoenix trying to find me. They'd tap my phone. They were going to every hotel in town. You know, I'm surrounded with love, and I was afraid to reach out. I thought I'm too far gone. You know, and now it's just time to call it a day. And I was so blessed that my friends surrounded me. I got in treatment. My sponsor took me through the steps in the first, you know, 3 weeks. And we were back on a spiritual plane, and I really went deep with some EMDR, and I really got down in that deep part of the stuff that just traumatized me I didn't realize. And even today, 20 years after it, I still don't sleep at night. I still have trouble sleeping because that is still a part of who I am, but I try to share that with people, that there's brokenness in all of us, and some of that brokenness doesn't get fixed. You know, and for me, the spiritual life, I got a God I believe in, that I love, and has given me the opportunity to still be here today, to still be able to talk to my daughter this morning on my drive in when she moves 2,000 miles away.
And right.
I get all hurt and ego-driven, and why didn't she leave me? Because it's all about me, you know, and then I catch myself that it's really not. But, you know, this life I get to live today is such a blessing. You know, it's such a blessing to wake up and not want to be dead. And to do that sober was so hard. That was the hardest year of my life, wanting to wake up every day and not wanting to wake up, but just grinding through it, staying busy, going to meetings, working 16-hour days, you know, doing everything I could not to sit still and quiet and really get down to the cause and condition and the things that go on inside of us.
So how and when did St. Joseph the Worker get organized and started?
Started 33 years ago in downtown Phoenix. So people were coming through the soup kitchen line And they kept saying, I need a job, I need a job. So a group of priests got together and said, we need to do something about this job thing. So they formed St. Joseph the Worker, you know, sitting around the fire one day, came up with this plan, and we were born then, and it's been around for 33 years. 1988, St. Joseph the Worker was founded.
And how did you get into the position that you're in now?
Well, I was at Crossroads and just opened the Arcadia facility. Mm-hmm. And honest to God, I was burnt up. I was burnt to a crisp. I was doing events. I was the development guy. I was the fundraising guy. I was opening facilities. You know, we found the flower facility and helped open it, and then did the same thing with the Arcadia facility and did that. And I was so busy that I thought, well, maybe there's something else out there. And so I just got a call from a buddy who was on the board and said, look, you know, here's an opportunity to work with the population you like to work with because you identify. And so I interviewed, and I'm so smart, I didn't realize it was a Catholic organization because I'm not Catholic. So I got hired and went to my first board meeting. There I figured out it was Catholic. So, and also that we were having some financial difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
And we just said, let's do this. So they wanted me to take a staff of 7 down to 4. I said, no. So I didn't take a paycheck until we got stable. And, you know, and it's been such a blessing that God has blessed our organization because we have no idea where our money comes from. We don't get funded by contracts and these other things. We just have to wake up every day and tell our story and get people to say, I want to help somebody. So everybody that gives us a dollar goes straight back to helping somebody get on their feet again. And so it's such a blessing. And that's how it all got there. And we've grown now to an organization with 24 staff members and 6,000 clients and 4 facilities and getting ready to open an office in Glendale. So, you know, we're growing right along and we're excited about it. But it's nothing to do with us. We just keep helping that next person that walks in the door and that gets honored. And God honors that for us.
So, Brent, how can people, if there's somebody out there right now that wants to donate to your cause, how are they going to do that?
SJWjobs.org. Just go to that. And if you need a job, 844-SJW-JOBS. We had to make that phone number because even before the accident, I don't remember things. So we had to get an 800 number that had letters in it. So don't ask me what numbers those are. They did me a number of 844-SJW-JOBS. And you'll get a person to answer the phone. They'll talk to you about how to get in. You know, our offices are open 8:30 to 3:30. So if you want to just walk in, you can walk in. But call in, make an appointment, kind of give us a heads up. And we'll be ready and waiting for you when you walk in the door with a bottle of water and an opportunity to change your life.
If they don't have transportation to get in, do you guys help with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can, once they get there. You have to get to the office, and then we can get you a bus pass. We can get you a gas. If you have a car, we give you a gas card to job search with.
So they got to find a way to get there, and then the journey can start with you guys.
Oh, absolutely. And we're easy to find, and we're off the bus routes and the light rails.
Yeah, where is the office?
We have one at 19th Avenue in Bethany Home. Then our other office is in Mesa at Dobson and Main, and both are on the light rail. And our main office, which just serves homeless clients on the Human Service campus, is 12th Avenue in Madison.
All right.
Most people know it as the CAS campus.
CAS,
but
yep.
It's the Human Service campus is what it is. And
so what about like driver's license? They don't have any ID. They don't know how to get their birth certificate. And oftentimes, you know, Social Security, all of those little intricate things. Do you guys help with those services as well?
Yes, we do. And I'm on the board of Homeless ID Project.
Nice.
And all they do is IDs and birth certificates. So they can help a person get an ID to get a birth certificate. Because there's only one thing you can get in Arizona without an ID, and that's arrested. So our goal is to get people IDs. And to get them birth certificates, because, you know, for us, it's so funny. On the Human Service campus, there's 19 organizations. And so we're in the back corner of the campus because we're the last stop. There's so much a person has to do before employment becomes part of their solution. You know, I couldn't get a job when I was out using, so I have to deal with my substance abuse. I got to deal with my core issues. And then employment becomes a part of my solution. A lot of our clients have mental health issues, so they have to get that under control. Clients have to have a place to sleep. If you don't have a place to sleep, eat, and shower, you can't begin a life of changing anything because you're not going to keep a job. You know, so for us, we're in the back corner. Well, Homeless ID was right next door, and they're the first stop because you can't access services without identification. Mm. And so what they do, you sit down, they help you get your ID, and if you're not from Arizona, they'll help you get a birth certificate in whatever state you're from. And so they do that whole process at no cost. And if you're from Arizona, it's easy. They give you a $12 voucher. You go to DMV and get your license. Amazing. Or your ID. So the services are there. I think the biggest thing people don't know is people don't know.
Yeah.
I tell people every day, we're the most impactful organization you've never heard of.
Right.
And we're trying to change that, but it's hard to do.
Right.
You know, there's bigger names than us that do different things than us, but, you know, we're just doing our part.
But I think you're the one-stop shopping kind of thing. You know, you can go to you, and if you want a job, you're going to find a way to help them.
We're going to remove
everything they need.
Every barrier to you going to work today, I can help remove it, except for one.
And willingness.
That's the willingness to go to work.
Is that what you would say is the biggest barrier?
100%. You know, it's just like recovery. Till I was willing, nothing was going to change. And it's just like with, you know, employment. Just like lots of things in life. Till I'm willing to make a change, nothing's going to change. You know, and that's what we have to tell folks every day. This may not be your day of willingness, but you're not going to walk out of my office without feeling loved. Because I say I love you and I want to help you. So I can't do more than you to help you. And that's the kind of the core of what we do. You know, we just give people hope. And a lot of times that hope turns into opportunity. And with a proper amount of willingness, it turns into a pretty sweet life.
Same as with recovery.
Exactly. It goes hand in hand. I didn't have to learn anything new at my new gig.
So do you guys help with permanent housing, or do you help people find a shelter, or how does that work?
Well, on the Human Service campus, we have a shelter. And so when the COVID broke out, St. Joe's the Worker partnered with the county to do a program called Employment Bridge. And so clients are in the downtown, they had this parking lot where there were 300 tents. So people were sleeping outside in a rock parking lot on tents. So you can imagine in June in Phoenix, you've got an 8x8 spot in a tent. And that's your living situation.
Yikes.
So that's hard to live that way. And so we had clients out there getting jobs. Now, how are you going to go to work every day? And so we partnered with the county when they had the extra COVID beds, you know, when they weren't full from positive COVID patients. And they gave us a few beds to start this pilot program. And so the beauty of this program is, as long as you got a job, you got a bed. And so as long as that client's working, we're going to get you a room. And we thought it was a 90-day pilot to start with. We have clients leaving there in almost 60 days, and 74% of the clients that have entered that program have exited it into their own housing solution with no vouchers, with no government assistance.
That's amazing.
They have the average savings of over $2,000, and so they pay their own first and last month, and they get handed keys that they paid for. Kind of like Donna said, it's nothing like getting that first paycheck, but it's also an amazing thing to know I worked and saved. And they work through their credit issues. You know, we help them with credit problems. I don't know about anybody else. When I got sober, I had some bad credit. And I still do. Because when you got a lot and you lose a lot, you got a lot of damage. So, you know, there's that rebuilding process. We have clients. We have a client living there right now that's been there for over 90 days, has saved $9,000. And we're having trouble finding a place for him to transition to because he has a criminal record and past evictions. And so these are the kind of things that we help work through. Because clients are willing to work, they're willing to do, but in the competitive housing market we're in, you know, you can't save money. If you're sleeping in a tent, you can't save money. You put everything you own in your sock, you know, and you can't go to work every day and be successful. So we're grateful for that partnership that we've been able to form. Because the one thing I love about our organization, we're collaborators. We don't want to do what everybody else does. You know, we want to fill that need. And the two biggest barriers we found outside of willingness to employment is housing and transportation. Mm-hmm. So we formed a partnership with a transportation agency that does transportation for the homeless and working poor. And so they're helping us get our clients to work. And so we're able to take clients to different employers that have partnered with us. So we're doing very creative and innovative things. And that's what's so nice about not having strings on your money. You know, nobody can tell us what to do with the money that you give us.
That's awesome.
We get to look at the client because just like in recovery and just like in life, we all have a unique way of getting to where we are. Not everybody has my story. Not everybody has their story. You know, we all are unique. And so we want to meet every client where they are and be able to walk them through that process. Some clients that come in, they get their own job. They just don't have a bus pass or they don't have non-slip shoes. So we get them those things and boom, they're on their way. You know, we ring the bell, everybody's happy, but we didn't have to do the full continuum of services. So we don't have a cookie cutter plan for every client that walks in the door. And we were so frustrated that criminal records and, you know, housing and transportation became such an issue that we were able to address those things. And we have people that talked about it. You know, people that lived in the old days of Crossroads like I did. You know, you got to sponsor a job. You paid your own way. You know, and if you didn't come up with your rent, you were gone.
Yep.
And so that's basically what this program is. there's a whole lot of accountability. So A, it's not going to be government funded because there's too much accountability. Because you do, you lose your job, you lose your bed. So if you keep your job, we're going to stick with you for a year and we're going to help you be successful. But you got to do your part. You got to go to work every day. And so that's the only piece to that. So we created that in August of last year and have had 74% of the people that have entered have exited successfully into their own apartment with their own money and got their own keys.
Amazing.
So you're talking about your relapse 5 years ago and your recovery story. So what would you say that you're doing differently today to help keep you on that sobriety trek?
Being honest, being open, you know, not trying to be busy. You know, I spend my life today not trying to be busy, you know, to be aware. Spend a lot of time with my kids.
Yes.
You know, even in my early days, the first time around in my recovery, my kids didn't know who I was because I worked all the time. 24/7, most of the time. Today, I spend time with my kids. You know, I have that balance. You know, that balance that's so important in recovery is the three sides of the triangle. I used to do it with guys every day. I'd call them and say, how's your triangle? You know, for me, I keep that triangle in balance. And then I have some folks that really know where I'm at. I tell them everything. And, you know, I was able to put the ego aside and say, you know, I'm just another broken person like everybody else. And I have my good moments and my bad moments. But no matter what happens, I tell somebody about it. I have the ability to tell on myself so I don't have to act out or I don't have to run from things because life's too good. You know, I don't take myself that serious anymore either. So I wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed before my accident. It's getting even worse now, you know, but it's so cool to be able to get up and live life every day and to have people that won't judge me, that'll love me. And it's the same people as before, but now I have a different perspective on life. Life's about different things.
Tell me about the triangle. I don't know what that is.
Really?
Yeah. I'm
just one of those normies.
I'm 85% normie.
God, that's honesty. Because I don't know any normies. I don't know what normal is, and I don't know normal people. So thank you for being honest about the 85%. That's pretty good. Most people are in the high 90s. So that's what they say, at least. So, you know, your life is in balance. You know, you got your spiritual side at the bottom. You know, I do my prayer and meditation every morning. I connect. You know, and then I have my side triangle of work and school or whatever I'm doing. And then the other side is the time with family and my leisure time. And, you know, for me, for a long time, I didn't have that side of my triangle. So I had this odd looking triangle that was like this. But now I have to keep that in balance because there's so many parts of my life today that I love to be a part of that I never allowed myself to be a part of. And so I get to participate in all three sides today.
So it's spirituality at the bottom.
And that's the base.
The base.
Yep.
And then work. And then
work,
family.
School, whatever that means to people.
Okay.
And then the other side is recreation, family.
Gotcha.
And the circle that goes around that is the program because that keeps it all connected.
Oh, so that's what that symbol is.
Yeah, so pretty much.
Pretty much. It's not the
unity
official.
Unity service.
Yeah, unity service and recovery is the actual triangle.
Yes. Okay.
So we try to, you know, I'm a simple guy. You know, let's get it simple. You know, I got to have a connection. You know, I have to have a psychic change. And for me, I lost that psychic change. And that's how simple it came down to. It came down to the point I lost that psychic change. And my sponsor told me we need a psychic change immediately because a guy like you is going to die. You know, I was on suicide watch for 5 days in this treatment center. You know, and thank God one of my best buddies ran it. So he kept an eye on me or I'd have killed myself. I was that miserable. Especially coming out of it and looking around going, this must be what purgatory is, to wake up and detox. And to have a sponsee come in and go, there you are. We've been looking for you for 17 days. And a whole group of us, 17 people, out searching the town. And to be happy they found me and me to be miserable that they found me. And so I had to walk through that. And so for me, that spiritual piece is key, to be able to find that connection. And then to be able to say, hey, I work hard. You know, and I participate in the program on the other side hard, and then my leisure time is my leisure time. Golf is my outlet, you know, and so that's beautiful. I have hobbies now. I never had hobbies before. My hobby was my job. My hobby was the program. My hobby was all these things that kept my life out of balance. Today, I have those three things, and it's been great during COVID. I got friends I talk to every day, and I love it. Some of my friends I have today, I met on day one in 2003 at Crossroads.
Yep.
And we're still friends today. June 1st, 2003, when I checked in. And there's guys I still talk to. There are guys I still play golf with.
I think one of the interesting things that I'm hearing you say, too, and no knock on any other kind of a treatment plan. However, you're saying that you went to the Betty Fords and those types of places, and then you came to Crossroads, and that's where you found your recovery. And I think that part of that is because Crossroads is that place where you're accountable, you're responsible. You know, we want to see what you're doing, and we, you know, and not that those other places don't, but it, for some reason at Crossroads, there's a different kind of a magic that happens in the unity of the facilities and just that piece of you're going to be accountable, you're going to be responsible, you're going to turn this little meeting card in that says you went to a meeting every day, and you're going to have this white card, and you're going to have it signed off, and, you know, and doing the room checks, too. Oh. One of the things that you taught me. You know, I still have people talk about my cop knock, because I would go and make sure. I said I did that so that you guys would know I was coming. Maybe you needed to get out of bed and get your bed made or whatever. They didn't believe me. So I think that
get dressed. You talk about an uncomfortable situation for a man living working at a property with 60 women. You got to beat on the door hard, yeah. And you got to get a response.
See, that must be where I learned that
so many times. Like, oh my God, stop it.
That's hilarious. But I think that that's one of the magic parts of Crossroads is that accountability and doing chores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to do chores. You're going to rake rocks. You're going to do dishes. You're going to clean bathrooms. And at some of the places, they just don't feel like that's important. But I think that getting back to basics, I had one of the coordinators tell me not too long ago that when he sees somebody that's in trouble, he said, you know, I'll go into somebody's room and there's a big pile of laundry. And I watch for a couple days. And then I go to him instead of pounding on him because he's not doing laundry. I ask him if he knows how. Because sometimes these people that have been on the streets, like you're talking about, that you guys help and that we help, it's not that they don't want to. They don't know how to.
Yes.
So Crossroads is that place that gets back to the minimum basics. Just like what you're talking about with St. Joseph the Worker. Let's get you an ID. Let's get you a resume. Let's get you the proper clothes. And Crossroads is, let's get you started with recovery. Let's help you learn what to do when you're at the bus stop and somebody wants you to get high. You know, it's all about those simple, simple basics. And I think a lot of times, because we're addicts and alcoholics, pick me, is we make everything so freaking complicated. Oh, and it doesn't have to be that. It can be simple. And, you know, I think I want to also commend you, Brent, for coming and sharing your story in such an authentic way, because a lot of men don't feel like it's okay to share about trauma. And for you to come in and say that you had this trauma, that these things happened to you on the street and you stuffed them, and hey, this is what happens when you do that kind of stuff. I'm hoping that there's somebody out there that needs, well, I know there is, needs to hear this message. And that they'll find the proper help. And hey, Crossroads can help you guys for sure. www.crossroadsinc.org, 602-263-5242. And also one other thing too to keep in mind with the kind of trauma that Brent's talking about, Crossroads at Pure Heart is a trauma center, and that's over on the west side. So give us a call if you need help. And we've been giving you the stuff about St. Joseph the Worker. And Brent, would you give that to us again so that they can get in contact with you if they need a job?
Need a job. Call 844-SJW-JOBS.
Yay.
Excellent.
Thanks for having me. This has been awesome.
It has been. Thank you for your story.
And I didn't
that was
cry.
Amazing.
Well, I didn't tell my daughter's story, so I didn't cry.
What
so
about
that's
your
good.
Daughter?
Oh, my God.
Come on.
You know, I'll never forget I was at the Crossroads. And my old scheme at the other 12 recovery centers was to call my kids and say, Daddy's okay. You know, that would always disappear and then call and say, I'm okay, coming back. You know, and I called my daughter, she was 12. And she, the only thing I had was a quarter to call from the Crossroads payphone. It used to be a payphone in the courtyard at the east side. Those things used to exist. And so I called her and she got on the phone. My younger daughter was 8 at the time, so she was always happy to hear me. But my older daughter was on the phone. It was quiet. And I said, you know, Daddy's okay. Everything's going to be okay. And she paused for a minute and she said, Daddy, I hate you. I wish you'd have died the last time I visited you in the hospital. And she hung the phone up. And for me, that was a moment that really shook me to my core. And there was an old guy. There used to be old guys sitting at the tables outside, just hanging out. You know, I think they were angels. And he told me, he goes, you know, that didn't look like it went well. and I was tears in my eyes, you know, and for somebody that has experienced a lot of pain to go, my first thought is, let's just go get loaded. You know, I can get back in somewhere. I can, you know, I've been homeless. I can do homeless. Of course, those are the first thoughts that go through your mind. But he said, it looks to me like you need to call your sponsor. And he handed me a quarter. And I called my sponsor. And that day I started on a path that, like I said, it hadn't been a constant path, but it was a path that kept me from waking up in a dumpster in a body bag. But I get a life with my kids. I get to be a grandpa.
Yep.
I get to be a brother and a son and all these things we talk about in recovery that I get to do today that I couldn't do then. I just couldn't do it. I didn't have the capacity to be able to love myself enough to love somebody else.
That's amazing. I love that story.
Yeah, me too. Congratulations on Thanks. Making such a beautiful life for yourself.
Yay! Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
Some days it's not, but it's okay. Yeah. Nice thing is, these days I can't remember it. So these stories are starting to come back, you know, after my concussion. It's a hard thing.
Hopefully this helped you a little bit. And I'm so, so grateful to see you.
Yes.
And so, so grateful that you came and shared with us today.
Because you mean the world to me.
You to me,
Always
too.
Always do.
Always.
I miss seeing you. Go away, COVID.
Right?
Go away.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show today. We've really enjoyed interviewing you and hearing all about St. Joseph the Worker. Is there any last words or anything that you want to add for our listeners?
You know, just know there's always hope and there's always opportunity. And there's a lot of people out there that would love to hear you call them on the phone and just say hi. So pick up the phone and call somebody today and just say hello. And they'll be amazed at what happens.
Nice.
Perfect.
Thank you, Brent.
Thank you.
This has been Recovery On Air, and we'll see you next episode.
Thanks for listening to Recovery On Air, the official podcast of Crossroads Addiction Rehabilitation with Donna Alexander and Beth Mercado. Join us next time as we continue our candid discussions about addiction and recovery. Listen 24/7 anytime to this or any of our shows online at starworldwidenetworks.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.